Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Someone asked on the text page, did the Texans sign Irv Smith Jr. to get Minnesota intel? I kind of thought the same thing. I always look at that when teams sign guys to the practice squad. Where did they come from? Are they with a team that the Texans are playing Minnesota? Irv Smith Jr. got drafted by the Vikings back in 2019 in the second round. He was with the Bengals last year. He's two things. One, he's a year removed from Minnesota. Two, they do have Danielle Hunter, who they can very easily go to for any sort of intel they need on the Minnesota Vikings.
I think usually what happens is that these minor transactions happen all the time and you don't really take note of it. But it registers, especially when it's not a non-marquee player or something, it just registers when obviously it's the opponent that you're facing that week. Yeah. So we have a tendency to read more into it than you should, especially with things like Irv Smith Jr.
Yeah. Vikings are getting some good buzz early on. I don't think people, you know, that we're getting a version of Sam Darnold through two games that people weren't expecting. Cowherd dropped his herd hierarchy yesterday. Remember less than 2 years ago when the Texans were weird owner? They only interview on Zoom calls.
Yeah, where that really all that told you was that Sean Payton is now a daft old man who doesn't understand the way things are done these days.
Right.
The reason that, I don't want to relitigate this. The Texans went via Zoom with Sean Payton because they wanted to have the first interview. It was actually a show of respect. And yet, the way Cowherd, good buddy of Sean Payton, tells it, it almost looks like Sean Payton felt disrespected that it was a Zoom call.
That they didn't jump on the
Texans wanted to get in first. Yeah.
They didn't jump on the jet and fly to go see him in Malibu or wherever the hell he's got a house. Yeah. But Cowherd loves the Texans now. He did his top 10 yesterday. Where are the Texans right now?
Number 2.
Yeah. I buy the Texans. I didn't even think they played well against Chicago. They're young, and I could see them getting to the AFC Championship and making a silly play and losing to Kansas City. C.J. Stroud is insane. That kid is the most effortlessly accurate guy outside of maybe Burrow and Mahomes in the league. Nico Collins, his size, and they're comparing him to Andre Johnson. They got multiple weapons, a great left tackle, the quarterback, the coach, the culture, the defense right now, a lot of sacks. Again, Chargers, Texans, I buy. Saints, I kind of buy.
Yeah.
Steelers at 2-0, don't make the hierarchy.
Yeah, he had the Chargers 3, by the way, with Jim Harbaugh. They're 2-0. They're the most intriguing undefeated team to me just because of Harbaugh. But to the Texans, Seth, it's funny. I did my mailbag yesterday for Hutopia for my podcast.
Yeah.
And that was a recurring theme in the mailbag. At least 3 or 4 emails that I got to the mailbag. Is it okay for us? Like, literally, like, almost asking the football gods in Houston for permission to compare Nico Collins to Andre Johnson.
Yeah, I know. I got that sense. Even I saw it on social media when they showed that little montage during the game.
Yeah.
That people were uncomfortable with that, and in some regards too, I do think that there was a certain freakishness to Andre Johnson physically that nobody else has. Very few others do, other than Calvin Johnson and others like that. That it's unfair to Nico Collins to try to show him, compare him to Andre Johnson. But the size obviously is a big difference. I think Andre was more, I mean, in the highlights they showed the one game where he bulldozes his way into the end zone. Andre Johnson
against
did.
The Cardinals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Three guys.
I mean, Nico doesn't have that in his bag, and that's not a slight against Nico or something. It's just that Andre was. If you've ever met Andre Johnson in person, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You would guess he was a defensive end.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If I see Andre, I think he's one of these defensive ends that's lost some weight after he retired.
Yeah.
He's just that big.
He's that big. And yet I think stylistically they do a lot of the same things very, very well. You know, the run after the catch, precision with the routes.
And especially, I think, the thing that you see perhaps Andre's influence in working with Nico is on some of these stops. and the shorter stuff that Nico, for a tall guy, is able to really sit down and stop on a dime. And it doesn't, it's not as impressive looking as, say, like when Stephon Diggs or Tank Dell does it, because those guys are just so super fast with it. It's impressive because you know how hard it is for big, fast guys like that to stop so immediately and quickly. And, yeah, that's a, I think, a big similarity with those two.
Yep. Yeah. So if you're comparing the two of them, don't feel like you're anointing Nico a Hall of Famer already. It's an intelligent comparison. But as Seth points out, like, just, yeah, purely if you just put the two of them in a picture side by side with each other, like, Nico looks impressive. You look at Andre like, ooh.
I'll tell you, okay. Honestly, the thing that Nico really has going for him that Andre didn't was the run after the catch because of ball placement.
Yeah.
You know, it used to annoy me when people would talk about Matt Schaub as an accurate quarterback because of his completion percentage. There were just so many instances of Andre Johnson running over the middle, but where he'd have to turn, he'd have to reach back for the ball, which is...
And that split second makes a big difference.
That just having to break stride or slow down a little bit like that compared to just catching it out in front of you at full speed and being able to turn up, it's just a huge difference.
Yep. Now, the Texans' opponent popped up on Cowherd's radar here. What do we think of the Vikings, old CC?
Number six.
The Vikings. I don't know how long it's going to last. I mean, they lead the NFL with 11 sacks. I don't think that's going to last over the course of a season. But they are 9-0 under this head coach, Kevin O'Connell, when they tie or win the turnover battle. So, I mean, he's cleaned up Sam Darnold significantly. That's what he does. He is the quarterback whisperer, the tall Sean McVay. Sam Darnold, I mean, even the Fred Warner interception. Fred Warner's the best linebacker in football. How many other linebackers get that ball? I mean, Darnold led a game-winning, clinching drive without Jefferson, Addison, and T.J. Hawkinson. I think we may have the best young coach in football in Minnesota. I have the Vikings at six.
It is a good coaching matchup this weekend. That brings us to the Vikings and the Texans. And the Vikings get a lot of love from around the league. You know, we do our power ranking of the power rankings every Tuesday. People enjoy that. Texans were either third or fourth in literally all the power rankings that we use for that segment. Vikings, 11th, 5th, 15th, 7th, and 9th. So they're hovering two games in the minds of many, somewhere around the fringe of the top 10. The one thing these two teams have done very well early on this season, the best in the league, in fact, and Cowherd alluded to it there, is that, yeah, O'Connell's an offensive coach and Darnold's done some good things, but similar to the Texans, it's been the defense that's been the calling card for the Vikings. They destroyed the Giants in New York in week one, and they held the 49ers, albeit a banged-up version of the 49ers, but the 49ers nonetheless to 17 points in week two. Defensive ranks in what they call havoc. Basically measures the percentage of negative plays a defense forces. Force fumbles, interceptions, pressures, TFLs, no gain, pass breakups. So the percentage of plays that are run against the defense that wind up with something that falls into those categories, something that an opposing OC does not want to have happen, Texans number one, Vikings number two. The Texans have caused havoc of some sort on 56% of the opposing team snaps, which matches the eye test. We brought that up. Like you said it many times, Seth, in the first 2 weeks of the season. Play to play to play, the Texans dominated the Colts and the Bears. You know, they gave up a few big chunk plays to the Colts, and that's what kept them in that game. But the vast majority of the plays, the Texans are causing bad things for the other team. Similarly, the Minnesota Vikings, 54% of opposing snaps. And that passes the eye test, too, and also passes the defensive coordinator test of Brian Flores, who bangs the blitz button like it's the bullets on Space Invaders. You know?
I think that, you know, at the end of the
day, Space Invaders was a game, kids, back in 1979. Yeah.
Brian Flores is a coach who does a really good job, a defensive coordinator, who does a really good job doing the stuff that, okay, it looks great on the whiteboard. You know, it looks great when you're drawing it up and you want to feel like a coaching genius. The vast majority of coaches like that also end up having teams that give up huge chunk plays, or they just play erratically, or they're good 1 week and then good the next. The thing about Flores is that he coaches the players really well to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. So they present the quarterback with a much different picture of what's going to happen at the snap and after the snap. And the players do a good job of executing it, and it wreaks havoc. At times, it's really hard, especially early in the season, where you haven't been able to kind of figure out who's got the tells about when they're blitzing and when they're not. That for a quarterback early in the season, CJ's up at the line, he's thinking like, okay, I'm calling for max protection because this is definitely a blitz. And then all of a sudden, they only rush three, and the Vikings drop eight into coverage, and it's completely different than what you expected. That's the challenge for CJ this week, is that he's going to see a lot of, it's like trying to read one of those hologram posters. Just you're not quite sure what you're looking at right away, and making the decisions in the heat of the moment can get very dicey, especially up in Minnesota with the crowd noise and all that.
There's some awesome individual matchups in this game. I can't wait to see what the Texans decide to do with Justin Jefferson if they let Stingley follow him around the field, the two LSU teammates going against each other. But man, you laid that out, Seth, the coaching matchups in this game, because Kevin O'Connell's basically the OC for the Vikings, and similarly, D'Amico Ryans is basically the DC for the Texans. So O'Connell versus D'Amico, and then Bobby Slowick versus Brian Flores. Those are fun coaching matchups right there.
And last week I thought the Texans did some really cool and innovative or creative stuff offensively in the first half. The little end around to Joe Mixon. I love that you're running a jet sweep with your actual running back. Like in those little things that you pop it on the defense before they're really ready for it. It's something they haven't seen before, and those things can pay dividends. If you look at the course of the game last week, though, some of that fun, cool stuff was in the first half. And the Texans did a good job versus the blitz in the first half. They only had one or two negative plays versus the blitz, versus the Bears blitz in the first half. It flipped on its head in the second half.
Yeah.
The Bears were effective with the blitz in the second half. So some of the adjustments and the way Bobby and CJ responded to it, they weren't as good at it in the second half. So yeah, the first half to the second half in the in-game, either adjustments or play calling is going to be big this week.
It will. Luke Kuechly was on with, I believe it might have been Kay Adams he was on with, former Panthers linebacker, Hall of Famer. Luke Kuechly's arguably, the best interior linebacker of the last decade. He's retired now. He loves the Texans defense.
A ton of credit. I called that they'd be the best defense in the AFC this year. They looked the part last night.
They had, seven sacks, a ton of pressures. And they're deep, too, at that position. Jerry Hughes has been around for a long time. He's obviously had a ton of success. And then Derek Barnett was a first-round pick with the Eagles. So it's not like Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter come out and then they put in two backup guys that aren't any good. They have depth everywhere. And D'Amico Ryans played in the league for a long time, super good player. He knows what he's doing on the defensive side of the ball. And I will say one thing about playing defense, you get a lot of confidence knowing your offense can score points. And I know they didn't score a ton last night, but when you have C.J. Stroud and Tank Dell and Nico Collins and those guys, and you can score at any moment, you play a lot harder, you take more opportunities, there's more chances to be had.
Did you see, Seth, I don't know if it crossed your timeline at all, as we're talking about depth on defense, one area the Texans are not very deep is at linebacker. Henry Toa has played well in Christian Harris's absence. D'Amico basically just said, screw it, we're going with two linebackers the whole time. They play nickel almost the whole game. Like Toa and Azeez Al-Shaair are the only linebackers that played snaps, basically, for the Texans in that game.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we were saying all offseason, is that Jalen Petrie, when he's playing the nickelback, it's the Texans played way more nickel last year than... And there were a lot of games last year where they played nickel as their base defense, basically. So I think it's a show of confidence in just what Jalen Petrie is doing too, that he is a hybrid safety slash linebacker. He's not a hybrid corner slash safety, and they feel good about that. So I think the good thing about all that is that the Texans have been playing very well against the run while playing with a theoretically lighter defense. And that's one of the big tests this week versus the Vikings, that Aaron Jones has been playing very well for them. He's averaging 5.5 yards per carry.
Yep.
So all right, is this defense for real? if they can continue to shut down the run the way they have been, that feels real. That's something that matters, especially against an offense like the Vikings.
Text message.
For what they want to do.
Yeah, text message. I don't like that the Vikings are facing a Kubshanistani offense for the second week in a row. It's like they got a cheat sheet. And for those who don't recall, the Vikings beat the Niners this weekend. So they're getting actual Kubshanistan, a Shanahan, and now they're getting an offshoot in Bobby Slowik. I'm not too worried about that. It's not as though like Bobby Slowik's going to run the same 60 plays that Kyle Shanahan ran. You know?
Well, yeah, you could say the same thing is, okay, then the Texans have a good scouting report on
Minnesota,
knowing what the 49ers were trying to do and what didn't work. So I think that, again, going back to the matchup of coordinator versus coordinator, now you do also have the fact that Brian Flores was a finalist in the Texans job search. It was a very weird scenario. I believe the Texans are still being sued by Brian Flores. I'm not exactly sure how all of that is working out because he had added the Texans to his lawsuit against multiple owners on the basis of retaliation.
Yeah,
and because he wasn't hired when he was a candidate. So that's a lot of drama that we don't know anything about because of the murky legal process. But, yeah, this is going to be a fun matchup between coaches.
Yep. Text message, biggest difference I've seen in the Texans this year from last is the physical toughness we have, and they make you pay on bad plays. Yeah, I mean, they've been...
Oh, yeah. We brought up yesterday the fact that the Texans are... they've missed five tackles. Now, listen, I know it seems like more than that. I don't know exactly how they judge missed tackles, but they do it the same with guys across the league. The Texans are averaging 2.5 missed tackles per game right now, whereas last year they were averaging 7.5 missed tackles per game. So I think the focus they put in the offseason on tackling and on technique and everything, it's a great lesson in that, yeah, you can practice fundamentals but also still deliver big hits. It's not an either or. You don't have to just be blindly throwing your body in there like a missile. I think fundamentally it's just a better team. They're playing with more discipline this year than they did last year on defense.
Can Seth explain why Tunsil keeps getting false starts every game? If he could, he wouldn't do it anymore.
Oh, if you could watch the live stream right now, I'm rubbing my face vigorously.
Yeah.
Okay, part of it is, you know, good offensive tackles get a pretty good feel for timing the snap count. Mm-hmm. You know, do they want to leave almost simultaneously with the snap? And there are a lot of tackles around the league that are good at it. Laremy Tunsil is not one of them.
Right.
The thing that's most frustrating is that he shouldn't have to be doing that because he's one of the most athletic offensive tackles in the league.
Yeah, he's freaking,
It's rare that the speed is the issue with him on getting back in his kick slide or anything like that. And it's just, and I think the most alarming thing is that half the time it seems to be in a critical situation. It's a drive killer. It's not just something that you could just brush off because, oh, it happens every now and then. Nobody does it more than him. So there's just no excuse for blaming the officials or anything else like that. And I just, I have no explanation for it. Yeah. I have no explanation for it other than that I guess he just doesn't care. I don't know. I mean, he's a made man. He's been twice the highest paid offensive tackle in the league, gratis of the Texans. And I don't know. It feels very unswarm-like. I mean, there's times I thought he was more aggressive in the run blocking just after watching it the first time. And I think he was over these last couple games, and yet there's also times where it looks like he's kind of checked out in run blocking. And I don't know what to tell you.
Someone asked in the mailbag for my podcast, they're like, didn't D'Amico make the linemen run laps when they false started this year in training camp practice? And I said, he did. The problem was you need to practice in order to get punished for a false start. And Laremy rarely practiced in training camp this year. He did not have to run. There was not a ton of negative reinforcement opportunities for Laremy Tunsil and false starts in training camp this year.
You know what? Okay, you know, we do the wildly popular circle of trust with the Astros.
Yeah.
This year we haven't done it as much. And I wonder if we should start a circle of swarm for the Texans.
Circle of swarm.
Like who's the most swarm? on the Texans. And we'll have to limit it. We'll limit it because it'll kind of be like a power ranking.
Yeah.
Let's limit it to five players.
Circle of okay. It's the hallowed circle of swarm. Yeah, it's
the circle of swarm.
No participation
week,
ribbons.
We'll do a circle of swarm.
I like that.
And we'll see. What's the over-under on number of times that Laramie makes the circle of swarm?
Half.
On the season.
A half.
Yeah.
It's the prop bet is not number of times. It's will he make it at any point during the season.
The false starts in critical situations is the most egregious because, man, these are your veteran players that you're supposed to rely upon. And instead, I'm like all out in man crush love with Kyemi Fairbairn, partly because he can erase Laramie Tunsil's mistakes. When Laramie Tunsil single-handedly turns a penalty from a 54-yard field goal into a 59-yard field goal.
Yeah, you know what?
Kyemi Fairbairn is more swarm than the starting left tackle.
He is.
Can we agree with that?
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
He's probably in the circle of swarm for this week.
He is. You know what? He would be if we had one. He's the king of kings right now. There were 73 field goals kicked this weekend, which I don't know if that's a record, but it's a lot. Yeah. 73 field goals?
Kyemi kicked 72 of them.
Yeah, it feels like that. It feels like that. Let's relive the one that Laramie turned into a 59. It would have been 54. Laramie turned it into a 59-yarder.
So we're going to see a 59-yard attempt here for Fairbairn. This will be his longest of the season if he makes it. Right hash mark, south end zone, uprights. Here's the snap. Here's the spot. Here's the kick by Fairbairn. He's got a lot of distance, and it's good. Fairbairn makes it 59 yards.
Wow.
And the Texans have a six-point lead with 1 second to go in the second quarter.
Mr. Clutch.
What a call.
Right here in the city of Houston.
Vandy's in the circle of swarm for that field goal call. And that killed him. Vandy, that was good. Yeah, man, Kyemi, I like the circle of swarm, Seth. That's a thing. We're doing that. We're doing that for sure.
The radio calls are better for field goals because you can really Vandy can convey the same thing that everybody in a stadium feels unless you're sitting directly behind the goalpost.
Yeah,
it's impossible to tell.
I just look at the refs.
Yeah, you have no clue sometimes whether it was or wasn't. You're just waiting for the refs to signal.
That's another reason why, especially from where we sit way up there, that it's a good thing the Texans are good again, because I just on those kicks, I just read the crowd noise and the officials. And back when the Texans sucked in 21 and 22, I mean, half the crowd at least is the opposing crowd. So you can't tell from the crowd reaction those seasons if it was good
who's
or not
cheering,
until you saw the officials give it the good sign, you know? So thank you,
Texans. Should we do Circle of Swarm on Mondays or Tuesdays? Short show on Mondays.
Yeah. I'm thinking maybe we do that instead of Stock Up, Stock Down. We do the Circle of Swarm leading into Acknowledge Me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, after victories, we can do Circle of Swarm.
Okay.
You don't get Circle of Swarm. No, I don't care. I don't care if you have 27 tackles and you perform CPR on one of the chain gang at halftime.
Okay.
You can't be in Circle of Swarm in a loss.
So they go into Kansas City hypothetically on Saturday, December 21st. Kansas City at that time is the best team in the league. They lose on a last second field goal. No circle of swarm the next day.
Oh, okay. No. You know what it needs to be? We need to do it on Fridays. It needs to be, okay, who do you trust going into a situation like that?
Oh, yeah, the circle of swarm, the five guys to watch for.
Yeah, this is the circle of swarm. These are our banner men going into this battle.
I like that. Yeah, you're right, because the circle of trust is not like an immediate game reaction. It's an overall evaluation of where we're at with things.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
So we can do it this week.
We could, on Friday, our first Circle of Swarm. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do
it. Finally, something to look forward to in this life.
Circle of Swarm on Fridays. Oh, I was going to end it all, and then I heard Sean and Seth come up with the Circle of Swarm. I got to hold
it. I got to stick it up. Put away the razor blades. I got to make it till Friday.
Got me a circle of swarm.
You're welcome, you poor addled soul. Your wife's a whore. Don't worry about her. It's all her. You know, you can do better than her. You've got Circle of Swarm to look forward to.
It is it's a life raft keeping you alive right now, the Circle of Swarm. This is a good analogy, okay? Before we get super agitated with Laramie Tunsil, now, it's not a perfect analogy because Jose Altuve is a future Hall of Famer and won two World Series, but Laramie Tunsil's false starts equals Altuve's base running gaffes.
Right. No, that's exactly what I think of when Laramie Tunsil false starts. I just, every time I think, dude, I know you probably power rank yourself as like three standard deviations better than Altuve, but you're not Altuve.
Right.
Like, you don't get away with it. You're not good enough to get away with Altuve-like base running errors,
yep.
I think.
Yep.
And especially without, if they win a Super Bowl or something, then maybe we'll start saying, like, oh, Laramie. Oh, you with your false starts. Oh, you're so silly.
We will.
The way we do with Altuve.
Yeah, we will. No, that's exactly what will happen, dude. I promise you, that's exactly what will happen.
I have to go to church and do penance for the way I feel emotionally about Altuve after some of his base running errors. And, Sean, I'm not even Catholic. The priest gets it.
Yep.
He's like, I don't even know what the whole process is. I just go into the booth there and be like, give me what you got, Padre.
Yeah.
I got to just tell me what to do. I'll make up my own Hail Mary because I felt I cursed Altuve's name and I felt awful about it ever since. I don't feel that way. I feel no sense of remorse or shame for the way I feel about after Laramie Tunsil false starts.
No. Team's got to win, man. Got to win at a high level before we let stuff like that go.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We should touch on the Astros here. As regular season games go, last night's was something, man. A lot of you probably didn't stay up for it. They win, the Astros do, 4-3 in 10 innings. I would say the big baseball takeaways, we'll get to the umps. The umps are their own takeaway here in this game. This was maybe the most poorly umpired game, which really is saying something. I mean, because the umps, they're not good these days. This was really bad for both teams. Both teams were completely, completely angry at the umps after last night's game. But though, Seth, I would say of like the actual non-umpire things, good to see Hunter Brown get back on track after his last outing where he gave up five runs in five innings. He was very, very good. Set down 11 in a row at one point. Two-run home run to Manny Machado was the only blemish.
Yeah, and he came off the mound at the bottom of the fifth inning after he had struck out what's-his-face there. And he looked like angry Hunter Brown. It was good.
It was good.
But then you blame in the sixth inning when he gives up the home run to Manny Machado. I actually blame the umpire for that one.
Yeah.
Because Machado had gotten a couple of really ridiculously bad strike calls against him, and he ends up, I think, hitting an adrenaline-fueled home run. And he stopped between second and third base to cheer on the crowd and everything. It was really infuriating, but otherwise, yeah, Hunter Brown had a great game.
Yep, so the game continued. There was an issue. Josh Hader had a timeout issue with the ump where Josh Hader's basically starting out with a one-ball count because it was a pitch clock violation, but he says he called timeout. The ump spent literally 10 minutes adjudicating it, where Hader talked about it after the game in the clubhouse. He's like, I'm kind of I'm kind of amped up and ready to pitch here, and you guys are sitting here hashing this whole thing out for 10 minutes. So there was that. The big one was, from an Astros perspective, the big one was Jose Altuve in the ninth inning with a runner in scoring position, two outs, appeared to foul a ball off his foot that rolled into the infield. Padres played it out because the umps didn't stop the play. The umps treated it like a ground ball, an inning-ending ground ball. Altuve argues with the umps. The replay clearly shows that it bounces off his foot, but for whatever reason, that's not reviewable, according to baseball. And Altuve proceeded to take off his shoe and his sock to show whatever mark there was on his foot from fouling it off.
He went full tennis mode.
Yeah, he went John McEnroe on these fools. Here's what it sounded like on the broadcast.
It hits Altuve's foot. They're going to say fair ball. Brennan Miller is going to say that ball didn't hit Altuve, and that's going to be the final out of the inning. Brennan Miller is not ingratiating himself to Astros players, coaches, or manager.
You've got to ask for help.
You got to check with other umpires to see if it did hit Altuve.
Altuve needs to be pulled out of the situation. They need to keep him in this game.
Altuve showing where it hit his foot, and now he's ejected.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
You're right, though. They should have got Altuve out of there. He's been ejected. We're going to have a tie game heading to the bottom of the ninth. Altuve will limp off the field. This game is crazy.
Yeah, this game is crazy, and then it got crazier in the 10th inning, too. We'll get to that in a second, but yeah, go ahead.
Honestly, Brennan Miller and just not even checking on that. And there's so many of these umpires. It feels like we see this in our profession. I think a lot of people listening see this in their profession. The old dudes that refuse to change with the times, and where they're like, nope, this is the way I'm going to do it. And in our profession, it's like, they want me to do videos on social media. That's not the way we did it in the 1970s. Right. Hey, you can't fire me.
Right.
Yeah, that's why these umps are like, no, I'm the ump, and I got big stupid shoulder pads on, and I'm fat for no reason. I'm just going to go ahead and do it the way I see fit.
Yep.
Oh, I can't wait until they get... So one thing in this life that I just desperately want the computers to take over.
Umpiring.
A lot of people fear AI. I'm like, man, I would too, except for... I just want them to destroy the umpires.
I do too.
At least guys like Brennan Miller.
Yeah.
It was just an atrocity last night.
It was an atrocity, and that was the ninth inning. In the bottom of the 10th inning, the Astros... Ben, get the final call ready here. In the bottom of the 10th inning, Hector Neris came in and ultimately wound up first and third with two outs with Profar up for the Padres. And they called him being hit by a pitch. And neither side wanted him to go to first base. Profar wanted to hit in that situation. The Astros clearly wanted to pitch to him. And they went to replay review. Ball looked like it hit him. They didn't overturn it, and the ball looked like it didn't hit him. They upheld the hit by pitch. Profar goes to first base to load the bases. He's livid. Manny Machado grounds out to end the game. Here's what it sounded like.
Here we go. 1-2 pitch. Towards the middle. Knocked down by Kessinger. Ball game over.
What a play!
Kessinger hadn't played since mid-July, and he knocks one down and makes an incredible play to win a game. Profar yelling at the umpires. He told them he wasn't hit by that pitch. This is one of the craziest endings you'll ever see.
Unbelievable. Bases loaded. A guy who just came up made an unbelievable play. Greg Kessinger with the backhand and the flip. And the Astros with every right to complain have actually won this game against this umpiring crew and this great team in the San Diego Padres.
As soon as Profar was retired, he got up and started screaming at the umpires that he wasn't hit by a pitch. I've never seen anything like
Both
that.
Both teams very unhappy with how this game was officiated.
That's how you know it's bad. Like, both teams are vehemently... both teams. Imagine the visual of both teams vehemently arguing with the umpires after a game.
And it would have been the exact same if the Padres had won and the Astros had lost. Right. It was just that egregious and
so
that
bad.
Weird. And I feel like at some point... a team should once or twice a year have the ability to challenge the umpire, and by that I mean challenge his worthiness of actually remaining in the game. Like, they should be able to, they should be able to say, like, no, this has gone too far. This guy is clearly drunk. This is not, it's not good for baseball. Both managers could agree on it. I think both managers would have agreed last
night. Oh, they
would have,
like, yeah.
Yeah, get some dude off the. I'd rather have one of my own, like you're one of your players at the as a. I'd rather have the opposing team's player, whoever is the most noble amongst you that will try to do a good job.
Dude,
I trust him more than I trust Brandon Miller.
Nobility, like they could have found the most dishonest one, and they would have been better than Brandon Miller. They put Manny Machado back there as the home plate umpire. You know,
I bet Machado would have some good strikeout calls.
Very animated. I'm here, you know what? Let's do that. I'm here for that. So that was the 10th inning. Both teams arguing. Now here's this. I believe this is the San Diego radio feed, and they're catching a glimpse of the Astros keeping the energy of arguing with the umpires heading down into the tunnels.
Mike Schilt is on his way out. And there is a little bit of a holdup here.
Well, we got a near fight down between the umpires as they're trying to leave the field, and they leave in the same place where the Astros are, and the Astro players were getting all over home plate umpire Brandon Miller, and the other umpires had to get in between to try to make sure that there wasn't any more physical interaction. Now the umpires are leaving the field.
Okay. The only evidence I have of what was happening there between the Astros and the umpires was what we all just heard. I didn't see it or anything like that. I am anxious to see, like, okay, is there any sort of fallout from the Astros continuing to argue? Like, clearly the Astros at that point were like, hell, we'll argue our asses off because they can't kick us out of the game. The game's over. You know, we can get our stuff in now with these umps. There's nothing to eject us from. What a crazy night, man. What a crazy night in San Diego. That is one of those games, if you stayed up for that one, that was worth it, it sounds like. I kind of stayed up. I was fading in and out in my chair. Very weird game to wake up multiple times in the middle of, I will say that.
Watching the highlights, I was getting annoyed because that Padres guy pronounces it Brandon Miller, and it is Brandon Miller, Chesapeake Bay. I've done some research on Brandon Miller in the interim. I'm going to start a letter writing campaign.
Sounds a little sociopathic, if you want to know the truth.
Went to Chesapeake College, apparently.
Okay.
I don't know where that is, but I don't like it.
Someone said that they wanted Angry Seth to infiltrate the umpiring organization and reveal their unseemly underbelly. They want you to infiltrate.
That's true. Yeah, I could do like that journalist did with the Washington Commanders staffer.
Yeah,
I could I could pretend to be. I'll just be in somebody's fantasy league or something, or his poker night, and I'll have an open mic the whole time. Yeah, I'll document it all. This will be a decades long project. One day, long after umpires have been replaced with AI, I will expose what it used to be like. Well, the travesties that you and I had to endure.
Yes,
Sean.
Yes. Bryce Young has been benched. That trade is officially awful. Has any team gotten a quarterback trade right in the last 2 years? We'll try to power rank them. Which of these trades is the absolute worst now that we know how the Bryce Young thing looks like it's ending in Carolina? We will get to that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
There's been a good quarterback trade in the last couple of years where they become more in vogue. We'll talk about that in a second. I think one thing we need to lay out here before we evaluate that, though, is the latest when it comes to Deshaun Watson's situation in Cleveland. We know that the Jane Doe that is suing Deshaun Watson for some pretty disturbing stuff, as of a few weeks ago, that she and Tony Busby, her attorney, are planning on having a meeting with the NFL sometime here imminently within the next several days. That's the hope. So the NFL is investigating the Deshaun Watson situation. Jay Glazer of Fox clarified the Deshaun Watson contractual situation. There's been a lot of speculation about, okay, if he does get suspended again, could his guarantees in his contract, future guarantees, he's still got $92 million guaranteed coming to him in the next two seasons. Could the guarantees go away because of a suspension from the NFL? Here's Jay Glazer of Fox from their NFL studio show this Sunday.
We'll start with kind of a serious story here, Jay. On Monday, Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson was sued for sexual assault and battery, adding to the more than 20 reported lawsuits he settled out of court already. How does this impact his future with the team?
So here's the deal. The original contract that was fully guaranteed for Deshaun Watson actually had protections in there. Even if he got suspended in the 22 or 23 seasons, he still would not lose any of his guarantees. Well, very quietly this offseason in August, they restructured his deal. When they restructured it, they did not put the same protections in for the next several years. So if he has a suspension moving forward, there could be a chance they can go back and get some of those guarantees.
All right, so they would still be on the hook for a ton of dead money that they've already paid him that got spread out and pushed into future years. Like, the Browns the best case scenario for the Browns, if they were to move on from Deshaun Watson, the best case scenario would be still that they take like a Russell Wilson size hit, like $80 million somewhere in there, and the future guarantees would be gone. The worst case scenario is they're stuck with him for the next few years with still $170 million in cap commitments to him.
Yeah, it's and I'm glad you put that tweet in here, Sean, that to remind me of how this is how awkward it is in Cleveland right now. Aside from the very serious allegations against him and all of that, like, it just on the football side of things, and because of those serious allegations, but also the fact that Deshaun has not played good football. He hasn't been a good quarterback since he's been with the Browns.
No.
They, at some point this past weekend, the Browns had to make a decision. I'm guessing they say, hey, we usually wish our players a happy birthday on their birthday, and it'll be kind of conspicuous if we don't wish Deshaun Watson a happy birthday. Yeah. So I guess we better wish him a happy birthday. Yeah. And they tweeted out, happy birthday, Deshaun Watson.
Dude.
A couple days after the most recent allegations come out. And the Sean, I don't want to ruin your morning or anything, but I got to tell you, people can be ugly on the internet.
They're this a little, yeah.
The replies were kind of aggressive. I was shocked. Dude. I clutched my pearls at how angry people could be about this and or funny.
How about the fact that the Browns used a font that looks like something a serial killer would do, like the cut up, like they cut out.
You know, looks like it's written in blood.
They cut out letters from a magazine to spell words and things like that. Right.
That's a really good point. It's on a it looks like there's a crinkled paper background.
Yeah.
There's cut out letters spelling it, and at the bottom it says dog.
Yeah.
In like a handwritten in blood font and color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels
okay,
like
maybe there was a. I wonder if the social media person who was asked or tasked with that graphic was like, all right,
here
I'm
going
to do it, but don't expect balloons and puppy dogs, all right?
Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, well, this is some Son of Sam crap where I'm going to put out here.
All right,
so very good point. Good by you, Sean.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I think your new recreational protocol is maybe paying dividends.
Dude,
there you go.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, I'm this close to being part of my... Get out of here. You talking about me, my ability to make videos? Or are you talking about my...
I'm talking about your gummies.
Yeah. Oh, that, yeah. Not good for watching baseball. Good for making Deshaun Watson.
We have to workshop this. By the way, at 9 a.m., we got to talk about exactly how we need to talk about gummies and things like that moving forward.
Okay.
The changing and shifting legalities and societal permissions
and
everything.
Okay, we'll do that at 9 o'clock.
I feel like I gave you a little... I feel like you felt put out when I didn't want to talk about something at 6 a.m.
Well, no, not put out, but I'm like, okay. I mean, like, you've done your fair share of things in the 6 a.m. hour as well that might not be...
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know.
You know,
I know.
Like,
that's
hey,
why
pot,
I felt guilty about it.
Hey,
even
pot,
saying,
kettle,
yeah.
You know, like... Yeah.
I know.
It's all good. Yeah.
That's why we need to talk about it.
I'm not angry about it or anything.
How do we discuss the use of marijuana and or marijuana analogs with the youth of America?
Marijuana-adjacent products, yes.
Things that are for now legal in Texas, but might not be soon. Yes.
Right. As far as awful trades go, is Deshaun still... Now that the book is closed on Bryce Young might be the most blatant bust of a number one overall pick. How does the trade stack up? Like the Deshaun, to me, the pantheon of horrible quarterback trades are the Watson trade, which is 3 ones, 2 threes, and a four... Plus, they gave him the biggest contract in history, and he had 24 lawsuits against him at the time. You have Russell Wilson, 2 firsts, 2 seconds, a fifth, 3 players. They, in turn, gave him a really big contract, not as much guaranteed money as Deshaun got. And now you got Bryce Young, who the Panthers traded 2 firsts, 2 seconds, and DJ Moore to move up eight spots to go get Bryce Young, who it looks like they've moved on from after 19 games of an NFL career.
Yeah.
Is Deshaun Watson still the gold standard for, or the lead standard, I guess?
I think so, because trades? With those other three, there's just not the same moral hazard, I guess, to it, if that's using that term properly. There was a certain, you had to make a deal with the devil. You had to make a deal with the son of Sam, or the serial, whoever made that graphic for Deshaun Watson we were just talking about. That not only were you... It's one thing you spend a lot of draft capital, but you're asking your fans to... You're putting your fans into a moral quandary, I think. No matter how you feel about Deshaun and whether he was treated unfairly, I don't care. Wherever you fall in that spectrum, that's a huge added element to it. Because we saw it, Sean, last year when Deshaun, or was it 2 years ago now, when Deshaun's making his first start for the Browns, and it was in Houston, even in talking to fans, Browns fans, before the game, while we're doing our pregame show, you could almost see the hesitancy. And part of it's because Browns fans have been beaten down for so long in general. But there were a lot of them that were just kind of like, we'll see. And here we go. All right.
Yeah. This is how you know the Deshaun one is the worst, is pretend Deshaun was squeaky clean off the field. Pretend that it was just a trade request, and they honor the trade request. This is what they get from the Browns. This is what they hand to Deshaun. The fact that it's, even without the off-field stuff, you could still argue that it's the worst trade because of how he's played, makes it the worst trade. Like, okay, how about this for a tiebreaker? He's being sued by 24 women while you're trading for him. Right. You know?
And honestly, look, think about Roberto Osuna. And there were a lot of Astros fans that were very conflicted about having Roberto Osuna in the organization at the time. And yet, it's a relatively trivial transaction and roster spot that put people in that bind. Whereas in football, the quarterback's the most important position in football, probably the most important position in any sport, in any professional sport. And you're asking people to make that Roberto Osuna moral decision.
Yeah.
And that's a lot, man. So aside from the actual trade itself looks to have been an abysmal failure. The assets that you gave up and this shouldn't matter, but it does. The Texans right now, and the 12 players yielded ultimately from that trade, 11 of them still have the chance to be good for the Texans.
They're on the team.
The only one that hasn't worked out is Thomas Booker.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
Which is an absurd success rate in any kind of trade.
Yeah.
So it's astounding how good it was for the Texans and how bad it was for the Browns.
Yeah. I think if you look at where the Texans are right now and imagine where they'd be now and moving forward without Will Anderson, know that the Will Anderson trade never happens if you don't trade for Deshaun Watson. I mean, that was the second pick of the first round. They had to move up to go get him, but at least they had a pick to move up from to go get Will Anderson. You know,
it was extra trade capital to the point. Yeah, if they didn't have that extra trade piece, maybe Caserio wouldn't have been felt the ability to be as aggressive. I mean, yeah, that was a... In general, even without tying the specific pick as part of that move up, I think it's the wealth of picks in general that Nick had made him feel like, okay, it's a lot more. You can only draft so many people.
Yeah.
Like, it ends up being a point where you're like, okay, well, we can't keep all these guys. It's just a pain in the butt. So the wealth of draft picks that Caserio had made him way more aggressive and stuff like that.
Someone said, can you tell us the 12 players? I can't name them off the top of my head, but just know that among them are Will Anderson, Tank Dell, Kamari Lassiter, Christian Harris, John Mechie, Damian Pierce. I will throw Stephon Diggs in there because the pick they traded back from 23 back to 42 to get that extra two they used to get Diggs was the Browns pick. That was that whole sequence that ended up with Lassiter and Diggs stemmed from the 23rd overall pick.
Here it is right now, without going through all of the various transactions. Right. But the trade package was used in parts of all of these deals and or picks. Kenyon Green.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I mean, a year ago, we wouldn't have been adding Kenyon Green to this necessarily, but Kenyon Green, the trajectory has changed. John Metchie, Christian Harris, Thomas Booker was the one negative so far. Damian Pierce, we'll see, but he's still on the team. He's playing for the team.
Fourth round pick.
Will Anderson, Kalen Bullock, Tank Dell, Kamari Lassiter, Jamal Hill, and Cade Stover.
And
like,
again,
tell me the one where you're like, I can't believe they wasted the pick on that guy. Well, including even if Damian Pierce doesn't return to what he was in 2022, there's not a single Thomas Booker is the only one that you feel bad about in any of that.
No doubt. And that graphic you're reading it off of leaves out the fact that the extra two they got in the Lassiter trade was used for Stephon Diggs. So I'll throw Diggs in there also. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, it's wild. All right, heading into the 8 o'clock hour, speaking of wild, the Astros game last night. This is the craziest final call that we've had, and that I'll include walk-offs in this. Todd Callis and Jeff Blum were awesome on this final call of the final out of last night's game, and you're going to hear why. This was the most insane regular season game the Astros have had so far. That's up next.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.